Hey team, you're about to experience my interview with Mark Brohan of DC360. He is the Senior VP of B2B and Market Research at DC360. And DC360 is both a news and a research outlet for all things B2B e-commerce. Mark has been in the game for a tremendously long time. It was my pleasure to speak with him about everything that transpired and happened in B2B e-commerce in 2023 and what some of his predictions are for the market in B2B e-commerce in 2024. Bear with me as there was some noise, some construction noise in the background on Mark's side, but the conversation was still amazing. Enjoy. Welcome to B2B Commerce Corner. Commerce Corner is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast discussing all things B2B commerce through the lens of agencies, consultants, merchants, and more. Enjoy. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the pod. It is my great pleasure to welcome Mark Brohan from DC360 to the pod. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
My absolute pleasure. Look, we've been trying to make this happen for, I don't know, probably over the last year. You and I have been crazy busy in this B2B e-commerce space. But before we dig into all of that and where what we've seen happen and evolve this year across the B2B e-commerce spectrum, why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
My stock line this year at these kind of things where I'm a guest on a podcast or I do in-person speaking is I like to say that dinosaurs roam the earth. They still do, because I consider myself one. I go back to the very beginning of both online retail and B2B commerce. In 1998, a group of us launched Internet Retailer Magazine, which over all the years became Digital Commerce 360. And then for 15 years, I ran our research arm where we began ranking first the top 300, then later top 1,000 merchants online in North America. And then we expanded that to do 6,000 merchants worldwide. So we have owned B2C e-commerce literally since 1998. And so I think of myself as maybe one of the historians of all this crazy stuff. So I can see timelines pretty clearly now. And then my colleague, Paul Demery and I, we go back to B2B when it was primarily just electronic data interchange. And we go back as far back as the dot-com crash, when all of these great marketplaces were going to come together and bring hordes of industries together and buyers and sellers and online exchange. So yeah, we've lived through all that. So I've got a different eye on both sides of e-commerce. But for the last many years, I've been focused on B2B e-commerce. So there is nothing quite like it. And I am not a consultant. I am not sometimes I play one on TV. What we are is we talk to and we write about and we analyze the data and the trends and the players that are moving business to business e-commerce forward. So we have no axe to grind, or just basically we're probably more journalists than research. If you think of the guys in the white coat with all the quantitative data and all that, we do a smattering of that. We're not Nielsen. But what we do is we take the pulse of the industry every single day, and then we work with the numbers that we come up with, and we forecast the growth, and we forecast what's happening with growth drivers per channel. And that's what we do. But mainly, my colleagues, Paul and I, we just talk to people every single day about this thing called B2B commerce and figure out what's going on and then try and report on it to move the ball forward. So we can talk about the state of the market when you're ready, but it has been quite a year, and probably because I just mentioned this whole timeline thing I have going, one of the most interesting years in this stuff I think I've ever seen. So I'll have a few things to chat about, but that's who we are.
And for those that don't know, DC360 is probably the preeminent news / reporting / analysis. If we think of all of the press around the e-commerce space, and we think of all the conferences, and we think of all of the publications around the e-commerce space, I can't think of anyone or any publication or digital news outlet more well-known in the B2B e-commerce space than DC360. And what I love about what you guys do in particular is you take a lot of data that is provided, for example, by the US government, by the UK government, by credit card companies, you grab data from so many different sources, but what you do is you distill that down
into understandable directional trends that are happening in our market. Whereas if a layperson like myself tried to dig into some of the data that's coming out of the US government and the Department of State and some of the other sources of data out of the government, the Department of Commerce, et cetera, some of those reports, they are, you feel, it feels like you need a PhD to be able to interpret some of that data. And you've been doing that so long now that you are able to actually break this down into some sort of pattern that is understandable by lay people working in the industry like myself. And that is something that I don't see too many other people doing today.
It's interesting. I like to say, since we can't sing or dance, we got to do something. So let's take a look at that. So I start with these kinds of things by, I'll give a few trend lines. Here's where we're at. Here's where we're going. Business-to-business e-commerce has absolutely zero in common with online retail or B2C e-commerce, nothing. Consumer-driven e-commerce is transactionally oriented. It's, I'm going to sell the consumer something based upon the terms they want online, all of that. So it's a very set, documented model. And so there are aspects, and always have been, and there's more so coming into business-to-business, but a better term for B2B e-commerce is business-to-business digital commerce, because everything in this day and age is becoming digitally driven by the customer base. And what I mean by that is that there are purists in the world, in the B2B world, like a manufacturer or a distribution company, who thinks that what passes for pure e-commerce is their website, their app, or their best pricing and products stuck behind the firewall. That has been what the industry considers to be pure e-commerce, and they're not wrong. So if you just take a very linear view, that passes for what it is. And that's about a $2 trillion market in 2024. It's going to grow about 18% year over year. So it's not small beans anymore. But typically, today's business buyer comes at a B2B seller, and that could be a manufacturer or a wholesaler or a distribution company or a merchant like Staples or whomever, across as few as 2, more like 3 to 5, and as many as 10 different channels. So you often hear the term user experienced kicked around quite a bit. And one of the trends you've heard most about in 2023 is that we must give our B2B buyers the optimal user experience. That is a mighty statement that's kind of power. There's a lot to it. So in 2024, the US B2B e-commerce market will probably break for the first time, maybe 2.1, 2.2. I'll do the numbers next month. That's T, trillion, not billion. Okay. That is probably 8% of all B2B digital commerce sales, 8%. What that means is that digital commerce, as applied to the term B2B e-commerce, means that a digital buyer in a business environment is coming across as many as 3, as few as 2, but more likely, in the high cases, sometimes 10, and probably more like 3 to 5. And these are not single individuals like on consumers. These are teams of buyers. The average procurement team is probably 3 to 5 people, minimum 2. And they're a younger self-service driven customer base, because guys like me are retiring. So our time has passed. So all of this began in COVID, old news, old headlines, been there, done that. One of the key takeaways for 2023 is that this new digital-driven business buyer that comes at you, let's say 3 to 5 channels, they think the old term omnichannel, and they've got their shopping list ready. And they will take a month to research before they make a purchase of any sort, including for the first time on your site. So business buyers in this day and age spend a lot of time doing their due diligence, finding out who has what they want, and then they pull the trigger. So that's just how picky this user experience is on the part of these B2B buyers. And what that means for sellers is 2 things. It is a tremendous opportunity, and maybe the biggest corporate headache, challenge, ritual, rite of passage maybe they have ever known. And there are soaring success stories. There are flat out falling down failures. But for the most part, and I know I'm generalizing here, at the end of 2023, slowly but surely, the B2B buyers as a collective group are beginning to put together the types of user experience that the B2B buyers want, but frankly, just not fast enough. So you've got a market growing at 18%, and those that are capable of measuring, analyzing, finding, tracking, and meeting those demands of these B2B buyers across these digital channels and mixing and matching, they're the ones who are becoming out the clear winners. You want an example? Granger is an example. MSC is an example. Caterpillar is an example. Boeing is an example. And it's not just the big companies like that, but I'm giving out some kind of household names that most people may recognize as the type of company that has the resources and, of course, the teams and the wherewithal to think this stuff through and do it right. Now, those are just names to show you who's doing it. I could come back with countless small to medium-sized business sellers that are doing the exact same thing on their scale, and it's working for them. So there is a lot of angst in the market trying to figure out how to meet these fast-forward moving omnichannel digital user demands, figured out against the fact that it's still a data-driven world, a budget-driven world, and where sellers are struggling is two things. A, there's still a lot of old ERP legacy systems out there, and those aren't going to go away anytime soon. Yes, indeed, it's becoming a much more cloud-based, AI-driven environment every single day, no question about that. But the AI component, and that's all a lot of people talk about these days, when this applies to B, you're seeing that apply to the marketing, merchandising, customer service, where that's the first layer of where AI is going. Supply chain stuff too, but maybe not as much as you would think. So it's only where I'm seeing now going into Q1, where my colleague Paul and I will be writing about the first real use of AI as applied to actual transactional B2B e-commerce. And that typically might be a product filtering, product clustering, robot, chatbot thingy behind a login portal. I can think of four or five distributors working on that. But that's where you're going to see the first iteration of this AI stuff become part of the transactional part of the business. So my point to all that is that there is a sea change of user experience. There is a sea change of technology. All of that began in 2022. All of that fast forward in 2023. So as we go into 2024 on the seller side, you're going to see a lot more budgets, a lot more resources going into two things from the seller side. Number one, what can we do or must do to make what passes for us as an e-commerce infrastructure ready to go for this omnichannel business buyer, and how soon can we do it? And that, of course, is going to vary widely from organization to organization. But some examples. The biggest single challenge that people tell us as to why they're not moving fast enough or want to move faster or can't on doing anything with digital commerce is internal obstacles. Okay. And not so much the sales stuff anymore. Companies woke up, I'm going to say 2 years ago, and began making better comp for the sales reps, a thing of the past. So yeah, it's still out there, but I'm not hearing anything as much now as I did 2 years ago. But having said that, the biggest single obstacle, and it's 60% of the sellers that we talk to, what's your biggest single deal for not doing more of this? It's internal challenges related to institutional buy-in. And my marketing guys and my merchandising guys are all for it. They're red hot for it. The CEO wants it, but guess what? The IT budget shot.
Now, you were saying mainly that there was this perfect storm that was created by maybe from the top down, it's digital commerce is getting high prioritization. Bottom up is getting high prioritization because there's digital buyers out there waiting, willing, and ready to transact digitally. But we've got this crunch sometimes of budgets And the blocker oftentimes sits in the IT department because any digital commerce effort brought to bear by a B2B business necessarily requires massive input by IT because it's oftentimes an ERP-led project.
Yeah, and the thing is, you got to keep in mind that no question that e-commerce is a much higher priority business to business than it ever was before. The memo is not lost. So the internal challenges are from across the inside organization. That's 60% talent. That's still the single biggest reason. And I got to tell you, it takes a global village. I've talked to European people, Aussie, New Zealand people, and even Middle Eastern entities doing B2B, same issues. So it's a global village, but same stuff. So the opportunity is the same. The cultures and the local business requirements are different, but still the challenges and the ops are the same. So what impacted why companies didn't do more of this in 2023, despite the mandate, despite the fact that they may indeed have customers really wanting this, and how soon are you going to do this type of thing? Typical buyer pressure was the general economy. When the Fed began raising interest rates, a lot of companies went scared and budgets went like that, like the perfect clamshells. Business spending dropped. I track manufacturing activity and distribution activity fairly closely from Department of Commerce stats, and it was a negative, I think, something percent for manufacturing last year. It was a great first quarter 2023 with a big backlog, but then as rates began to rise, business spending became head in the sand type of thing. So a lot of projects that were scheduled to get something, CEO said, hold off. Customers held off. And then, of course, as big tech does lead kind of some of this stuff. So in Google, that's 12,000 people go in a single day. And the next thing, other kind of big tech follows suit. We see it in our business. Business spending just goes into a holding pattern. So a lot of, even though there's a lot of e-commerce activity that's still pent up and going on, the economy certainly did come into play because production was down, business spending was down, and we're still not quite seeing the rebound yet. So you got a lot of macro factors that affect how business gets run. E-commerce is no different.
But I think if I had to wrap that up in a nutshell, I think it was smart of me to double down on B2B e-commerce consulting 3 years ago, and I've just continued to narrow down since, and I'm seeing a lot of the same trends you're seeing, so I don't think I have to worry about my future. These B2B brands are just, it's almost insatiable in terms of, even if there was 100 of me out there, I think we could all eat very well with the B2B commerce demand, and I think the other thing that you raised, which is a very good point, there's a thread I'd like to tug on a little bit more here, which is that traditionally B2B e-commerce experiences were hidden behind a firewall, behind a login. You had to log in to see anything. And I see this as perhaps the single biggest opportunity in 2024 for brands that already are doing e-commerce and already are offering some kind of digital experience, self-service experience for their buyers. If they can get out from behind the firewall, because remember, that not only is the customer locked out behind a firewall, but so is Google. And so therefore, Google can't index your pages. They can't index your products. They can't get the long tail SEO benefits. So for all intents and purposes, those brands that hide behind a firewall, they're usually hiding behind a massive field sales team as well. So they have a field sales team going out and courting new customers and bringing new customers in behind the shroud, when in actuality, modern digital buyers, they're searching and browsing online before they even decide which seller to engage with and create a credit account with to create a formal buying relationship with. And I think that to me seems like a huge piece of low-hanging fruit that B2B merchants yet don't fully comprehend.
Let's break that down just a little bit because there's a couple of things going on there. First off, you are not going to see this whole black and white thing where one day how you've run your distribution model for 100 years is going to change. That's not going to go away. But what it is going to happen is it's going to change and is going to change fairly wholesale in a big way because everything in this day and age is becoming digitally driven. I could tell you the amount of, just take a typical Salesforce where it used to be, okay, I've known you for 30 years. You're my guy. I'm your guy. Tell me what you want. I'll type it in. It becomes a web order. You know, that's still passes for what could be considered an e-commerce transaction today. What's happening more and more is that companies like, I'm trying to think of who is a good example of this. It'll come to me, but the example is the rep rolls out to the to whoever the remote customer job site is, tell me what you need. And the next thing they bring in the e-commerce team on the laptop or the portable device to help them assist with the transaction. Yeah, I'm here. I know this guy. So the sales guy becomes, as they should be, the product consultant to your client and not just an order taker. So you're seeing a lot more of that, where the team itself is supporting the agent in the field to do what they do, which is sell, but using their expertise because they're on the job site. What do you need? I've got that here, but my team can help me filter, focus, get that for you. A lot more of that going on. But the point I wanted to make here is that there is a public persona and a private persona. And a lot of companies will tell you face-to-face that I'm not concerned about Amazon business. These are HVAC guys and plumber guys and electrical services guys and the bread and butter auto parts guys. I've been in business for a million years and we're a family company and we sell in 5 states and we have 5 branches. Our customers have been with us forever. They come to me behind my firewall. I control all this. And then that's the public face. You buy these guys a beer and what they're going to tell you is they see a lot of technology changing who their buyers are. And yeah, Amazon business now does 1 in 4 every industrial supply transaction, 1 in 4. And they're adding components pretty quickly. So my point is, if Amazon's not going to come into your world, somebody like them is, because that's just how this stuff operates. So there will be, there always will be the portal behind the login, because that's how business operates. But that world is going to become much more customizable, much more AI driven, much more product clustering, if you will. So there's great change behind the firewall and great change in front of the firewall. So the mindset is changing that as we become more cloud driven, AI driven, transactional driven, user experience driven, all of that is going to filter down this next year into a much more robust e-commerce experience for B2B buyers and sellers. That's the fortune cookie. That's going to happen. It's going to move along faster than it ever has before, but that's what's going to happen. So Amazon business is Amazon. So Amazon tends to lift all boats. So yeah, you're going to see them do a lot more things in a lot more spaces, but are they going to sell as many widgets as a guy who's been in the widget business for 10,000 years? So I tell small companies, make your strategy right for you. Find out what your customers want, and then customize your e-commerce experience to fit your needs, your budget, and primarily what your customers want. And increasingly these days, what they want is marketplace access. The fastest growing channel this year, next year, the year after is going to be B2B marketplaces. 5 years ago, Paul and I counted 75. This year, I could have counted, I stopped at 500. I'm forecasting 1,000 in 2 years, and I got to tell you, I will not be wrong. Are they all going to make it? Probably not. But a marketplace is just a term. There's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different models of what a B2B marketplace looks like. So you can call it a marketplace, but basically, it's a forum that's going to bring buyers and sellers together in a digital ecosystem to allow transactions to happen and the whole support system to make that happen. Reality, that's fast forward.
I'm seeing, sorry to interrupt you, I'm seeing two trends from my side and some of the consulting I'm doing and some of the feedback that I'm getting from the market that echoes exactly what you said. The two trends are, maybe we still have a portalized login, meaning you have to log in to see your prices, to get your deal, to be able to purchase through us, but we're going to ungate our catalog, meaning that you can at least, you know, our catalog is still exposed to Google. You can find our products in Google. You can find out that we sell them. You can go to the product page. You can get all the product information. Okay, maybe you don't see inventory. Maybe you don't see prices, or maybe you see the most expensive price that we sell at, or the highest MOQ that we sell at, or whatever the case may be. But we're definitely going to ungate the experience so that we can get the traffic from those people that are doing the early research weeks and weeks in advance. Because what they don't want to do, those B2B buyers, they don't want to have to go and create an account with a seller, a distributor, a manufacturer, a wholesaler. They don't have to go and create an account only to find out that they could get it cheaper from some other vendor, right? And so they want to do as much research as they can around who has it available near them, ideally, who has it at what price, ideally, at least a list price. And they want to be able to do as much research as they possibly can before they go through the account creation process, because there's usually multiple days, multiple forms. There's usually a credit check. There's usually some things that go on in the B2B world before you can actually even create an account with a seller. And so those barriers have to come down, and they are starting to come down. That's the first thing. Second thing is I'm seeing a lot more B2B sellers want to add on marketplace capability to their existing B2B e-commerce site, which is already driving significant traffic for them, mainly because they want to be able to range extend and they want to be able to create an endless aisle experience without actually having to bring all those products into their ERP and list it on their own e-commerce website before they can start selling those products. And so it lightens the load massively to create their own marketplace. Maybe they are a manufacturer and they also distribute. And this is a hybrid model I'm seeing emerge almost everywhere, is that maybe 20 to 40% of their catalog, they manufacture themselves and distribute themselves. But then the rest of their catalog, they're a distributor or wholesaler for the rest of those products that are vertically aligned with them. And so whilst today, those products they distribute, they have to fully onboard into the business before they can sell those products. By establishing a marketplace that the manufacturer of those products that are selling it to them as a distributor, if they can maintain, if they can list, if they can update those products through their marketplace technology instead, then it's now a shared load. And you can onboard more products faster into your B2B business than ever before.
I got to tell you, I talk to distribution companies every single day, and a lot of them don't like us when I say this, but this was not the case 2 years ago. Here's the case now. Marketplaces are becoming such a mainstream way of business buyers doing business with business sellers. And once again, keep in mind, marketplace is a very generic, customizable term, because call it an ecosystem and a platform for bringing buyers and sellers together for whatever they want to do, supported by all the feature functionality that they want. I mean, that's basically what's happening here. But what's happening is that there are industry marketplaces. Chemicals might be a good example, if you will, where they, at some point, these new marketplaces are adding on the exact same feature functionality that traditional distribution companies have. And not only do they become the competitor of the traditional distribution company, they put them out of business. That was brought to my attention 2.5 years ago as a futuristic thing. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I've been asking people about that trend fairly regularly now for going on 24 months and then some. And it's pretty true. So if a marketplace can bring together blocks of buyers and sellers with a huge inventory of industry-wide product mix, why do you need the distribution company? When the marketplace, and Xometry is a good thing, is a perfect example. They're going very far down the rabbit hole of manufacturing services. You're going to see distribution companies that don't make the switch fast enough have a new competitor. And it could be in their same industry, and maybe somebody they've known for an awfully long time. Yeah, the world's becoming upended here, but that's definitely going to happen. The other thing I will add is that you are going to see AI fast forward in 2024. But let's be clear about that. It's here now, but it's primarily search, personalization, product recommendation, because that's primarily what this does now. So even next year, when you finally see the first components of AI applied to transactional commerce, it's going to be for faster product clustering or faster search, or maybe for faster kind of product configuration. Engineering is interesting. They're doing a lot. I mean, e-commerce goes so far up the CAD/CAM pipeline, what these engineers do now in automotive and electronic sensors and all that stuff. You're seeing AI become an enabler there. But my point is, much more is going to happen, but it's not going to be this like huge sea change overnight, old way, new way, but it will fast forward. In other words.
And the other two areas where I'm seeing AI come to the fore, apart from search and merchandising, I'm seeing it come to the fore in CPQ. So CPQ now is, you could almost call that the B2B version of search and merch. You could almost think of CPQ as B2B's own special version of search and merch. And CPQ, because of the complexity of modern CPQ, configure price quote functionality, AI can really help in some of those areas in terms of tying products and components of a final product together using the commonality of attributes applied to those products, et cetera, et cetera. So that's one area. The other area where I'm seeing AI starting to take a real high level of importance for B2B merchants is in the gathering of disparate data from disparate suppliers. I'm thinking mainly of distribution here, not so much of manufacturers, but of distributors here. They might have 200 suppliers, say, for example, of products that they distribute, and they might receive product data in the form of PDFs, in the form of CSVs, in the form of exploded product diagrams, in the form of images, in the form of videos. They'll have so many different types and shapes and forms and formats of data that they need some sort of technology that can streamline. And sometimes the suppliers don't even supply data in a meaningful way apart from data on their website and content on their website that still needs to be scraped from their website manually today. The distributors themselves are looking at ways of how they can streamline and harmonize the receipt of that data, the standardization of that data, and then the conversion and mapping of that data into a PIM system or an ERP in a consistent way, right? And they want to automate that process because today that takes a tremendous amount of man and woman power. And unfortunately, that is sometimes resourcing that modern distributors just do not have. And I'm working with a fairly new technology to market right now. That's all they do. They are a data science, an AI-driven data science company that they sit in between the suppliers and the distributors or the manufacturers, and they go out and they aggregate all this data from those suppliers, regardless of format. They standardize it, they distill it, and they map it out to, say, for example, a PIM or an ERP, and that automates about 80 to 90% of that data gathering and harmonization process, regardless of source and regardless of data type. And they could even go out and scrape those suppliers' websites for information if that's the only way the information can be gathered. And I think that is an incredible use of AI that allows you, that business to scale much faster than just throwing bodies at it.
Yeah, I'm gonna go a little ET on you here because we shifted our discussion into the technology realm. A lot of companies, and they, as rightly they should be, everything is clustered around the e-commerce platform. What's shifted for the e-commerce platform is that I now have called the e-commerce platform the mothership. And there is a range of 12 or 13 different products, application, technologies that all hub and spoke into the mothership. And so that ecosystem includes the, some things you just mentioned, the CPQs, the PIMs, all of that, if you will. So the evolution of the platform is upon us. And we're entering the age of what you're going to hear a lot more of. I hate this term, connected commerce. It comes down to just giving me better omnichannel access, but the marketers love to use the word connected commerce. So the shift in technology next year is going to be to either how do I upgrade my platform with more headless, composable, connected variables that include AI for a certain, but basically, how do I use more of this API-driven headless stuff to connect to all of my channels that integrate across my digital purchasing path? So that's where the platform world is headed. And then the more things change, the more things stay the same, because there is still this tremendous battle on the back end. And if the back end is not ready, the front end is not going to do a damn thing for you. And there are still so many organizations across the board, across the world, across any size organization you think of, where we still haven't put in the ERP system that we need to provide the product data to that whole new front-end pipeline and that ecosystem to the hub and spoke that we have. The more things change, the more things stay the same. So a lot of companies are still fighting that battle. And if you look at what's happening with digital supply chain, procurement, ERP kind of stuff, you saw a big disconnect in all the surveys that I see from a lot of people, and that could be Ernst & Young or Deloitte or whomever, SAP, and new ERP, supply chain management, digital transparency, AI-driven stuff. 70% of companies, and I see that figure all the time, high priority. What's your reasons for not doing it? Budget, personnel, internal disagreement. So all of that has been around since probably the beginning of time as the reasons why this stuff doesn't take forward or doesn't take precedence as quickly as some might want. My point, though, is the new technology is fast forwarding. you will have to use the new technology to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. But the point is, it all comes down to clean data. And if your ERP system and supply chain system and all those back-end core systems are creaky and legacy-based or not being along fast enough, then you're never going to win the space race because you've lost the space race. So a lot of companies are still focused on doing that basic core mission of getting that ready. And of course, that's expensive. And but you ask a lot of guys, what's the hangup? They'll tell you that's exactly just it.
Which is probably why, just to mirror your sentiments, which is probably why a significant chunk of the B2B e-commerce projects that I'm brought in to help lead and transform and help them scope out and architect, a lot of those turn into an ERP replatform project first, even though they brought me in for e-commerce, right? I consult on the entire digital commerce stack, including ERP and CRM, CDP, PIM, et cetera. And a lot of those projects, they think, oh, we'll just be able to slap a fancy new e-commerce front end on the front of our operations. We're good to go. And then when we dig under the bonnet, we start looking at the structure of their product data, the depth of their product data, the organizational and consistency of their product data, and how their customer data is aligned and how it's structured and engineered and architected. And they're not ready. I'll tell them flat out. So I'll take a sample of their product data. I'll take a sample of their customer data. We'll look at it and we'll be like, until we deal with this data issue, and usually that means by definition an ERP issue, if we don't deal with the data and back-end system and operational capabilities first, you will never be able to be successful in digital channels. And so oftentimes we got to take two steps back before we can take the next 100 steps forward that they want to take in their business. And what got them from 0 to 1 is not going to get them from 1 to 100. And they're slowly starting to realize that and budget accordingly.
Or get creative. There's some fun stories out there. We did this one earlier this year. There's a great example in the fittings and hosing space for pipe guys, the Alaskan driller guys, right? There's an example of a whole industry, and they're just one microcosm of kind of what they do. I think there's 8 or 10 or 12 of them, and they're all up there in the Northwest in Alaska. What they did was they've got like their Fastener Oil Gas Association thing. They all put in and developed as an industry, as an association, a PIM system. They all jointly funded it. They all agreed upon the taxonomy for it. They all agreed upon everything like that. I think they selected Unilog to do the actual work for them. But my point is, they all compete on what they should compete on, which is their product base, their product knowledge, their customer base. But the technology became just a foundation they're all using. So they all began with kind of a shared playing field. They still compete one another, but they came together to make technology happen faster for the industry that in turn benefits the company versus us versus them. So yeah, and there's examples like that across quite a few industries.
And then you can hang an industry specific marketplace off the backside of that industry-wide PIM, and bang, you're up and running very quickly versus everybody doing their own thing and fighting against each other and purely competing instead of collaborating.
There's a guy that his name is Michael Eichinger, and I've known Mike forever. And Mike's the chief digital guy for a company called Bay Fastener. They're upstate New York, been around for 60 years, and they own the fastener business, have for a million years. Old family company, good company, always ahead on the e-commerce curve. And Mike, a lot of people, they think the trash can's proprietary in B2B, so you sometimes don't get the real details for public consumption. But Mike is a little bit different, and he'll tell you what's going on. They put in this, they own 2/3 of the manufacturers coming into their distribution e-commerce sites. They built a marketplace. They spent 2 years building it. 2 years building it. They launched it, and they realized that the work had only begun. It was a 4-year process to build the marketplace because they had a top consultant help them do it. But when they launched, they realized that they were nowhere near ready to serve an entire industry with all the problems that arise. So it's not like, here we are, plug in. It took them 18 to 24 months to transition more of the customers they wanted to bring on board, because Michael tell you, that you can onboard somebody with a couple of products in maybe a day, as opposed to somebody with thousands of products, weeks and months. And the typical old-fashioned way, they come in by carrier pigeon, letter carrier, Excel sheet, drawings on the walls. It's not a total, it's not a perfect world out there. So my point to a lot of people is, we talk to Mike as a harbinger of what is really happening with a rank and file company that knows how to do e-commerce very well and how to execute. And it took them 3+ years to get to a sustainable base in a marketplace. And they'll tell you that it won't become a profit center for them for 4 to 6 years. So you bet it's the Wild West with marketplace stuff. But the fact of the matter is, it's an expensive build. It's a time build. And it's a longer build to build the critical mass to bring you your return on investment. So it's not for the faint-hearted. It No. takes some money and resources to pull this off. But yeah, there's more folks pulling it off. So we'll see.
So it can be done. So it can be done. Look, I know, Mark, look, I've taken more time than you had originally intended to give to me, and I'm super appreciative of your generosity with me today. I've wanted to interview you for so long. If we wrap this up with one or two tips, if you're the average distributor out there or manufacturer that's doing, I don't know, you're doing around $50 million a year. Maybe you either don't do any e-commerce today, or maybe you've got an aging 10-year-old system which doesn't get used, sitting in some server cabinet somewhere, and even your customers don't use it, your sales reps don't use it, nobody in business uses it. And so you're looking to replatform, or you're looking to implement a B2B e-commerce solution for the very first time in your business. What would be your first one or two tips for them to prepare for what is going to be a journey? It's not a destination, and it's not one and done. This is going to be an investment forever, an incremental investment you're going to need to make over time. And there's no silver bullet for this thing. So how do these B2B brands start to prepare themselves for this new world of digital commerce?
I get that question quite a bit. I love that question. The answer is, there's no one-size-fits-all for e-commerce. So the thing is, where a company who can be small to medium-sized, who either is still brand new to this or wants to further things along, there's two key takeaways. Number one, do what's right for you. Number two, look at the strategy of technology. Look for and think through, really think through all the way through your customer base, what it is that they want us to do with anything e-commerce, and then take it one, take it two, and execute. Because at the end of the day, your customers will tell you what they want, and then you're going to figure out how to serve them using digital commerce. That's as simple as that. So it's not this whole sea change that is going to happen to you in the next 6 months. It's basic blocking and tackling, and taking on what you can afford. But the strategy has to be thought through, bought into, and doable based upon what you as an organization see as your goals, objectives. And all that means is, if your customer wants more e-commerce, just figure out a tried and true way to go, because you're not going out of business because nobody has the knowledge you have. Nobody's got the customer base you have, the product mix. So relax, get ready for the ride. The ride's here, but join the train in a way that makes sense for you, and you're going to be just fine. And that's the big picture. Blocking and tackling.
Love it. And what would your final question? I always like to turn the microphone over to my guests. One final question. You can ask me whatever question you like. It can be personal or professional. So Mark Brohan from DC360, what's your question for me today?
My question for you is, I have been talking probably ad nauseum and too much about what I see as the top two trends for 2024. What do you see as the top two B2B e-commerce trends for 2024?
I definitely see the marketplace trend. I see more people being interested in it, asking me about it, asking me how they can get into it. How do we connect our systems together and get our products listed on Amazon? Or how do we play in a vertical specific marketplace? What's the tech we need to do? Because we don't play in that space. I'm definitely getting more questions about that. So I agree with you. I think B2B marketplaces in particular, and vertical specific B2B marketplaces, are a really exciting place for B2B businesses to look at. But if they're not doing any e-commerce today, meaning they're not doing EDI, they're not doing punch out, or they're not doing self-service e-commerce, it's going to be difficult for those brands to execute on that opportunity straight away without some digital capability within the business. So that's the first thing. I think the other thing is just the general demand for B2B brands to execute in some fashion on e-commerce, whether that's implementing EDI for the very first time, or implementing a punch out for the first time, or starting to consider direct self-serve e-commerce, even if it's only for replenishment ordering, even if they still use their whole field sales team and everything else, but maybe just replenishment reordering after they've been approved and they've got their restricted catalog available to them, et cetera, et cetera. So enabling replenishment ordering for my existing B2B customers, buyers, I think that's that trend is going to accelerate. And I actually see, look, I think because of the relative immaturity of B2B e-commerce versus where B2C and D2C is already today, I think we're probably nearly a decade behind in the B2B world in terms of e-commerce adoption. And so I think it's such a greenfield space that we're all going to be very busy in 2024, if for no other reason than the curiosity in the B2B space is increasing around how they can adopt digital channels, how they can implement digital channels without it crushing their business and without it costing them an arm and a leg. And I think that's largely driven from a grassroots level because we have two competing things or two things coming into confluence right now, which is that the dinosaurs of the industry, the people that have been running the B2B space, both from a buyer and a seller standpoint, a lot of them are retiring. A lot of them are moving out of the space. They're wanting to pass it on to their children and grandchildren, et cetera. This is happening. And then on the buyer side, the exact same thing is happening. The B2B buyers who are maybe old legacy buyers that they've been friends with Joe, the supplier for 100 years, and they go out to beer every Friday night together, et cetera. That's great. The relationship component of B2B is not going to go away. It's never going to go away. But I think the new generation of buyers and the new generation of sellers are starting to move into place. And as a result of that, their default expectation is a lot more digital commerce. That's their default expectation because in their personal life, they're doing a lot more e-commerce, right? And so that's where we're going to get to.
And just two quick takeaways. But Jason, thank you for having me. I love doing these kind of discussions. Do keep your eye on last mile logistics next year. That's going to be a trend to watch. And also, we could spend a whole other podcast on product sustainability. That's huge with the B2B buyers these days. So we'll come back and talk about that at some point. But hey, this has been great. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, Mark. Now, if people want to get a hold of you, LinkedIn or directly through the DC360 website, how do you prefer?
Oh, I'm easy to find. Mark at digitalcommerce360.com or Mark at LinkedIn. So people know where I live.
I'll put all of your links into the show notes to make it easy for everybody to find you. Mark, I really appreciate your time.
Paul, me and Paul are on the same street corner every day hanging out. So we're easy to find.
Are you a B2B or D2C e-commerce merchant? Then head over to greenwoodconsulting.net to learn how we can help you scale your business.